Welcome to Cloudlandia,
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson, the organizer.
It's being recorded by the organizer. That's right.
Yes.
That sounds like someone who, thought things through, made arrangements ahead of time. All kinds of things have to go into.
Has a series of forward steps that he or she is confident about.
Yes, this is all. It's all falling into place. And here
yes.
we are.
And
we're
the beneficiaries of advanced planning. Yeah.
So we had a couple of great workshops this week. That was good.
Yeah.
Seems.
What'd you come away with?
Well, it was interesting doing the work ahead of time, thinking about, I was thinking ahead to prepare about the VCR mindsets, which was a good exercise for me, kind of wrapping my mind around. And, in the workshops, the division of the three stages, looking back at where would be the distinctions, I had some interesting, because to divide 32 years, I was only looking at my adult, my entrepreneurial career stages. I was thinking about where to divide those, because depending on how many divisions we're making, you could make it, I could divide into more categories kind of thing. But the interesting ones that I settled on was the 1988 to 2008, where that was really the midpoint of that was the rise of the internet, because for the first 10 years, there was really no internet, impact in those first 10 years. And it's just starting to rise in the late 90s there, in 97, 98. And that was where I caught on to this early wave of the internet. And, I shared with you about Homer McDonald, about Stop Your Divorce, that was really sort of that. And then going into our money-making websites business in, and going, leaping in that the internet was going to be a thing. And then 2008 is where I mark that was the beginning of the full immersion internet. Like the first 10 years were about the internet was still a place that we went to for distraction in a way, right? You had to seek out the distraction of the internet. It drew you away from your primary life on the mainland. And in 2008, when the iPhone had been out for about a year and bandwidth was starting to not become an issue where you could stream videos, you could do all these things, that was marked the shift where the internet was now becoming the main thing, and now in 2020, when Corona came, that really marked the shift that the primary world now is Cloudlandia. That's the I'm really declaring that as the distinction, the time when we really went through there. So, and I'm counting this stage, like that was an interesting thing. You didn't leave it as an open-ended sort of stage, but I'm counting it as 2020 to 2030 as this
stage three
full migration, the migration to Cloudlandia. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the, yeah, that's where the VCR, mm-hmm. that's really where the, when I look at the mm-hmm. VCR formula as the operating, mm-hmm. My operating guideline or the operating guideline of, you know, foundationally what we're doing in the free zone frontier, that's really the mm-hmm. essence of the free zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a good, yeah, really well, clarifier.
I certainly see the internet or Quadlandia as where the advantages are, where if yes. there's going to be new advantages in the future, they're going to be in that realm. They won't be, they won't really be in the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
The benefits are still going to be in the physical world, but the advantages that give you unusual benefits are on the internet, and I'm very partial to Zoom because I,
mm-hmm.
you know, it fits in perfectly with our workshop structure that we had created over the previous 30 years. And,
yes.
Another example that I did a special workshop on blockchain on Thursday, I think it was. And, we had 103 people show up, and I had Gary Oberbrunner and Pete Kofod. And were you there? Did you?
No, I was not.
No. No. Yeah. And it worked great. It worked great,
yeah.
You know, and not very much structure. I just had each of them say how they're approaching it in their business and what they're noticing the uses of it are. And then I had people just jot down 3 points, could be questions, could be insights that they have. And put them into breakout groups, came back. Terrific. It was sort of the first hour I had them talk, the two speakers, second hour Q&A. It was terrific. And impossible if you had tried to do it, an event like that in the mainland. People would have had to travel.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, that whole we're really seeing now, as people become more and more comfortable with Zoom, I think we're settling, like you've kind of hit on it, that the maximum is 6 hours with a 1 hour lunch kind of thing. The regular workshops, you know, going 10 till 4 kind of,
mm-hmm.
that seems like doable.
With a break every hour.
Yeah. With a break every hour. But the nice thing, I'm really enjoying doing 3 hour, workshops with mm-hmm. with a break, with a little 15 minute break in to divide it up. That's a winner.
Mm-hmm.
That's a winner too. Mm-hmm. And I've done that now mm-hmm. on, where we'll do a series of, you know, three Tuesdays instead of one full, mm-hmm. or two full mm-hmm. days. Yeah.
Yeah.
But saying it's as we're getting more, as we're more comfortable with that transition, doesn't require any. People are instantly ready to Zoom at any time. They know what to expect, and there's no preparation. When it was first happening, everybody had to kind of learn how to do it and how to make sure that they got their, downloads and they had the right mm-hmm. setup, and how to get everything well. But yeah. Everybody's got, and you're starting mm-hmm. to hear now, even in, you know, vernacular, people are talking about having a Zoom room in their mm-hmm. house and mm-hmm. Leaning more towards it. It's funny, you know, you've got your, this is like just a tri-actor here that I was literally sitting on my white couch here with Stuart saying, because we have an office building that is, you know, off, separate from my house that I bought the building when there was a cafe that was in the next building that we would always go to. And then the cafe closed and now where we are, it doesn't feel like it's any, there's any reason to be there kind of thing. You know, now it just feels mm-hmm. like a building in with no other real reason to be there. And I was saying to Stuart, I'd really like to buy the house next door here and have that as our, you know, studio type of setup. And I said mm-hmm. that, and then I was texting with Nick Nanton, and that's exactly what he just did. He bought the house across the street and turns it into a mm-hmm. Studio office.
And we used our, throughout the COVID period, we used our cottage house, the one in the middle.
That's what I mean, yeah. That's what I'm saying is mm-hmm. your house is, that worked out to be the perfect kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's nice to just walk across the lawn.
And the thing is that I tried to keep the main house free from business related
right
conversations and activities. I go over there too. Although you're special because I'm in the basement. I'm down in our study downstairs basement in the
okay. I wondered. I was going to ask you which one, whether you were over in the garden house or at your house.
And the reason I do that is I have double. I have double internet backup here, so if anything happens,
I got you. Okay. Yeah. Oh, smart.
Yeah. And there's a fireplace right here too, and I have a fireplace. It's kind of coolish today. I put the fireplace on. I'm sitting here in the fireplace, and I'm having a little nibble of some Irish whiskey. Irish whiskey.
Oh, too. Well, okay. Then mm-hmm. there we go. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Just a little added, just a little added dimension, you know. To
yes,
to our thoughts here. Yeah. Yeah. We're in a great big shuffle. I think worldwide we're in a big shuffle. That first of all, the internet is playing a major part in all news now. You know, and because first of all, the news is mostly on the internet, and and we're in a period where. A bit like the Wild West, actually. You know, right. You got you know, nobody's figure out what the rules and regulations are for, you know, whether you qualify for full membership on you know, on the various media that come out of the internet, it's kind of a disruptive period. You can feel sort of the disruption. And, you know, people are threatened by it. People are, they're outraged what the people they don't like are doing with the internet. They have suspicions that the Russians are doing, you know, illegal things and corrupt things and things. It's full of news. It's a very news abundant phenomenon, this collision of the mainland world with the Cloudlandia.
Yeah. Well, it's really, you know, I was thinking about, I'd love to maybe if we could talk about these, I took a shot at some of the mindsets Mm-hmm. I'd love to get your thoughts on them if we can mm-hmm. talk about some of them, because I identified eight mindsets that I shared briefly in our workshop, but mm-hmm. it would be good for, yeah. this would be the perfect place for us to talk about them, because that's what we're really mm-hmm. trying to do, is establish some of the mindsets here of mm-hmm. Cloudlandia. Mm-hmm. So the first one that I have is anything is possible. That's the guiding kind of mindset, that anything is possible. And so mm-hmm. I put, think big, even if. And the thing about, the reason I put in this even if, like, anything is possible. And that we've got such evidence about around it, right? Where anything is possible. And I keep pointing to examples that, you know, you look at what the people have done ahead of us here in Cloudlandia, great moments in Cloudlandia. If you look at, you know, the original things that I pointed out to, of Kylie Jenner becoming a billionaire mm-hmm. in 3 years, Lil Nas X having the number one song ever in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. And now you look at Mr. Beast opening up the largest, you know, on his way now to one of the largest restaurant chains without opening a single restaurant. And so mm-hmm. this is where I say you might as well think big, even if you're not connected or you're not things, because everything's possible. Like, what, it's unlikely. Mm-hmm. If we were to go back 5 years when Mr. Beast posted the video about with 8,000 subscribers, predicting and hoping that he'd have 1 million subscribers by the time 5 years came around, there was no way to predict in that guy that he was going to be head of one of the most successful restaurant chains in the world mm-hmm. 5 years later. There's no way to tell that Lil Nas X, when he was, you know, a college dropout living at his grandmother's house, that he was going to write the number one song ever in the history of the Billboard charts on the back of a free beat that he found on YouTube from another kid living in his parents' house in the Netherlands. I mean, it's crazy. It's such unlikely stuff that's happening every day. There really is no gatekeepers, right? So anything is possible. What do you think of that so far?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I mean, first of all, it's a new realm. I mean, in some ways, in an early time, these would be like Thomas Edison or someone like that, you know, who literally created modern, you know, electrified America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the big thing is that what makes it possible is the venturesome consumers mm-hmm. who will immediately inquire and investigate and take advantage of some new idea that somebody has that they literally just found out about 24 hours ago.
Yeah.
And you know, so I keep reminding people about the Zoom thing. I said, you know, it's not so much that we're using Zoom, because we were using Zoom before. The real breakthrough is that everybody else is using Zoom.
Yes, that is the real breakthrough. You're right. I remember watching Star Trek as a kid and thinking how amazing it was that Captain Kirk could, you know, go on a on the big screen with people, you know, have these video calls. I thought, wow, that's really, that's amazing, but that's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are.
But one of the thing is that there's kind of a widespread empowerment has kind of happened. In other words, and that's the nature of technology, that technology is only useful if a lot of people can use it.
Yes.
Technology for one person is not an interesting, it's not an interesting phenomenon. It's the widespreadness of technology.
No good to have the only fax machine.
Yeah, the only phone.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. And if you were the only one with a light bulb, the neighbors would probably come along with pitchforks and you'd be burned at the stake.
I wonder what when you pay attention to those things, what are like electricity being the thing, the light bulb was, that was the first thing. How long was it after the light bulb that the next thing became electrified? Like, what were the series of things that benefited from electricity? Because I know it was really invented for lighting, right? Nobody really was thinking about the other things that you could power with it.
Yeah, I mean, lighting was such a big deal.
First of all.
I mean, it's we really don't like the dark. Mm-hmm. You know, humans just don't really like the dark, I really don't have much of a grasp of the next, let's say, 25 years.
And I wonder how long it was. Yeah, this was.
Well, I know that all of a sudden, probably the 1870s, 1880s, it was being applied to electrifying, but actually illuminating, because it wasn't being really used for other means. It was for illumination. And, there was a famous point where 16 block by 16 block area of New York City suddenly with a press of one button was electrified one night, and that was a big deal.
And the World Fair was the big reveal of it. I'm going to look into that now, because I remember seeing, I remember reading about Albert Lasker and when they were introducing refrigeration, you know, now that you had electricity, this was in the age when everything was becoming available, but people, it was the first thing that people were scared of, seeing their meter running all the time, because the refrigerator required constant electricity, right? And so people were afraid that every time that meter's running, that's costing them money. Mm-hmm. And so they came up with the words that reassured people that the Frigidaire was the right choice, because refrigerators are equipped with meter miser technology.
Well, you certainly, if you're going to have a meter, you want it to be a miser.
Yes. So you have a meter miser technology that really only uses the minimum amount of electricity that it needs.
Yeah. Well, it's a fundamental crossover, because, you know, if the entire history of everything was, you know, that all the energy went out at night when the sun went down. You know, the the sun was the main energy. I mean, really, if you think about it, the sun was the energy. And, well, we have what I think are conceptual crossovers, you know. And I remember, I think I've talked about this on one of our previous podcasts about the series Upstairs, Downstairs, which was kind of like Downton Abbey, except there's, in the, you know, the, I think it was the British Broadcasting Corporation in the 1970s, but it was in the city household. It wasn't like Downton Abbey out in the country. And there was an upstairs, which were the rich people, and the downstairs, which were the servants. And an episode I remember distinctly is one where they bring a telephone into the household. And strangely enough, they put it in the servants' quarters, not in the quarters for the rich people, and, you know, the owners of the house. there's only one person in the household that's allowed to answer the phone, and that's the butler, because the butler would also open the front door. If someone was at the front door, the butler would do that. So the logic of welcoming someone into the house in the physical world was now translated to the telephonic world.
That's interesting.
And when the phone would ring, the maids would shout, Mr. Hudson, the telephone, but none of them could pick it up. And Mr. Hudson would put on his jacket to answer the phone. He was in shirt sleeves, go and get his formal jacket. And then he would answer the phone, and he was very formal. There was no chit chat, you know. It was a very formal conversation. And what I'm saying here is that conceptually they haven't made the crossover yet. They've made the technological crossover, but they haven't made the conceptual crossover that goes with the technology.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I wonder, and the reason I think that is that I look at this Cloudlandia as this, I see we're cascading now these, once people realize, that's really the buzzword there. I think it's that phrase, once people realize that you don't have to, I mean, who not how is a big piece of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my mindset number two is, most capabilities are commoditized.
Yeah.
And that's where who, not how comes into it. And I always preface it by saying commoditized has really in the business world gotten a bad rap, a bad reputation, in that that's the last thing you want to be, is you don't want to be commoditized. You want to be, you know, unique and different, but I'm using commoditized in the, you know, the definition sense of the word, that it's available for sale. That
and I think it's competitively available.
Yeah.
That's yeah, it. I mean,
that's exactly right.
Something is not a commodity unless it it can
come choice.
That there's different competitors offering this same or similar product or service, and one of the telltale signs that you've entered the commoditized world is that the discussion is now on the basis of price.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's where. Who not how really comes in, that this gives you an opportunity to have access to a global Hulodex
mm-hmm.
of commoditized capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
That anything, you know, anything that doesn't, there's opportunities for both geographic arbitrage and choice in who you're choosing, because the capabilities are transferable.
Well, the other aspect about it, to put two of your ideas together, who not how being one of the ideas, the other idea being the VCR, that it's when you think of a big goal, so you have a big goal, and the traditional way is if you had a big goal, you also took on now the necessity of you having to do all sorts of hows that weren't part of the picture until you had the new picture. Once you had the new picture, then there's all sorts of hows you have to do. And the breakthrough here is there are hows involved in the new what, that you're after.
Yeah.
But you're sidestepping the what's, and you're saying, no, I'm going to have other individuals be the who's, or other things, because it could be a technology that's actually, but probably someone's involved in the technology, so they're the technologically empowered who. And
well, you know, it's interesting. The where is that market in China that Peter was sharing with us at the Abundance?
Shenzhen. It's the nearest area of the mainland, north of Hong Kong.
Yes. And that area, you can go, and all the electronic components that you could ever wish for are all there. Mm-hmm. And you could literally go from one booth to the next booth to the next.
The ultimate building. Commoditization.
Yeah.
Of electric components.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a buffet. Cafeteria, kind of. You can go and select your components there. And that's what I envision now is happening with capabilities, you know, all of any kind of capabilities. When you look at the building blocks of Cloudlandia, you know, there's kind of a finite, thing of digital, digital outputs or digital requirements kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you think about everything is derivative of creating and manipulating and formatting and writing words and pictures and videos and sounds, all of that to create digital, digital outputs.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is, all that's completely available.
Yeah, well, using the word shortcut, because I'm convinced that that humans are the shortcut species. You know, if you look at all the species on the planet, humans are the ones who are most alert to shortcuts, that you can do things faster, easier, cheaper. Yeah. And you can do it in scale, you can multiply things. And so a book, I've just ordered the book for everybody in the 10 times program called The Secret of Our Success. And Darwin explains how biologically and physiologically how things take on different forms over a period of time, because the organisms are responding to surprises, unexpected changes in their environment, and some of the species have the ability to adapt and therefore survive when there's a change in the environment, others go extinct. But he said that the author of this book, Joseph Heinrich, says that humans are the only ones that, first of all, operate in all environments. They're the only species, with the exception of ants. Ants are in all environments. But ants had to do it by creating 14,000 different species. Humans are the same species. They've just created 14,000 different shortcuts, you know. And depending where you are, you use one set of shortcuts. And when you're someplace else, you're using some other set of shortcuts. If the weather's really hot, you develop shortcuts related to surviving the heat. And if it's really cold, you develop shortcuts designed to survive the cold. And he said, and we do this on a cultural basis. We don't do it on an individual basis. So what we create, an example would be you just showing me a drawing and putting some words to the drawing that says who, not how. And I says, wow, 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 that's, oh, yeah, I like that. And then within about 4 days, you and I are in a workshop, and you're doing the voiceover, and I'm doing the graphics on the screen showing how who not how works, and then everybody in the room kind of gets it, and then eventually it becomes a small book, and then it becomes a big book, and then I probably have, you know, 10, 12 different thinking tools that all have who not how as a component, and now there's 140,000 of these books making their way out in the world, and you know, and everything is going well. That's a cultural thing. That's not an individual thing. So as a culture, as a learning culture, we've shared an idea, and the next person who hears it gets the full value of the idea
of the blockchain of everything that's gone into contributing on top of it. Right.
Yeah,
it's a building. Yeah, that's a really
And the VCR, you know, has the VCR has the same quality to it. At the moment that people get this way of thinking about things, they get it fully. They don't have to practice for 10 years to get it. They can get it
right.
They can get it in 5 minutes if they see what's involved. That's cultural learning. Humans are the only species that do this. Now, there's no other species that does this.
But it's interesting. I was just thinking out loud that the if humans, I've often said the thing that sets us apart is we're playing the cooperation game, that we're all doing our parts to do it as humanity, right? But what you were talking about with entrepreneurs are really, we don't want to go all the way to species, but they're a division, a distinction among the species of the people who are playing the cooperation game at an even higher level.
Genus. We're a genus.
Yes, we're a genus.
Genus. And that that is that we are, other people use the shortcuts, you know, in the human species. Other people are born into the shortcuts created before them, and then new ones are created during their lifetime, and they utilize them. But entrepreneurs are the people who have decided that going full on and directly focused on the use of everybody else's shortcuts for the purpose of creating shortcuts, because what the product that we're trading in is actually shortcuts.
Yes,
You're trading in shortcuts. Breakthrough Blueprint is a shortcut. Yep. You know,
that's right.
And you know, mm-hmm. the coach tools are shortcuts. Yes. So we've made it our business, not just to use shortcuts, but to be actually in the business of creating and, you know.
Shortcuts and, by combining. That's what the cooperation is. And that actually, yeah. that my third is VCR assets as collaboration capital. And that's mm-hmm. what we have as tools to collaborate, to cooperate. Mm-hmm. Is looking at our assets that we have are either
vision, yeah, and I think you know from my little venture and from my little venture into the blockchain world that yeah. the blockchain yeah. is being created to reward shortcutters. And that, in other words, the you create something new. In previous days, you'd have to have wealthy investors to mm-hmm. perhaps, you know, get your idea started in the marketplace. You know,
yes,
and then you hope that you lived in a kind of a political jurisdiction where that was even allowed. You know, it might mm-hmm. not be allowed. Whereas the blockchain is saying. Right off the bat, anyone who's got something that's a shortcut, you're going to get full protection. In other words, you'll be designated as the originator of the idea.
Yes. Like that's, so there's an interesting thing because my next one is transparency. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the right word is that transparency is. I put attractive, but transparency is, I'm trying to think about what the right word is, that there's, you know, so you look at where.
Well, transparency means it's the real deal.
Yes. But it's also then there's no, it's light. It's not darkness. There's no, no darkness.
Well,
in this
you can
thing.
See the what I understand as it relates to blockchain. You can see the complete the complete lifetime of the
yes.
idea. You
yes.
can you can see where it was born. You know who
well, that's
it was
what I'm
born
wondering.
To.
That's what I think. Like, imagine if, and this is where I think it's shifting. Is that imagine if I look at the first, like the real public, bringing out of who not how was in at Genius Network in what maybe 2016 or 17, whatever we were first having these. Conversations and I was at the opening of the event. We were making comments of things, and I was sharing what I had just written that illustration that I showed you mm-hmm. of that digitizing, you know, that cooperation finding who not how is a is. Digital, you know, shortcut as opposed to the linear time mm-hmm. of how, right? Who yeah. is a who is a shortcut? So, would be really interesting if that we think about that as an NFT in a thing.
Yeah,
that illustration, a snapshot of that with the 5-minute explanation of it. Mm-hmm. As the entry number one in the blockchain journal of the life
yeah.
of who not how. Yeah.
Yep. And then you brought it out in one of our
in the workshops.
Procrastination. Well, yeah. Procrastination. Joy of Procrastination podcast, which was on a Sunday. And then within the next week, I think it was a Thursday. It might have been a Thursday. I just asked you to talk about it.
In the workshop.
And you talked about it, and I was on the smart board, and I just
drew
diagram. Drew the diagram, and that's really, as far as coach goes, that's the first place. But you could do this, like, first of all, if you talk to Eunice, I bet you they have the recording of this. I bet they have the recordings. It would be interesting to get it. You know, it would be interesting to get it because we were just talking about, it's actually not an NFT. It's a smart contract. One of the distinctions that we got from our workshop on Thursday was that when you have a new way of doing something and your purpose is to establish originality, what you establish is a smart contract on the and then you can add things to it. So for example, you'd have a smart contract that was called Who Not How, and then you would you could give the basic thinking process. You know, basic thinking process. Yeah. You know, how your original diagram would go on as proof of originality. You could date it probably from Genius Network records. They could actually date it. It could happen on this date. There might be a video of it or a recording. And
my journal pages.
Your journal pages. That would be the beginning of it. And that would all go on the blockchain. And then are talking about it. So these then could be additions. And you can't change a smart contract. Once you put a smart contract on blockchain, you cannot change it. But you can enhance it with NFTs.
Right.
So you would have a smart contract of Who Not How. But then there would be NFTs, and that would be historically other developments, and you could take every development and put it on. So that's how it would work.
That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think that this is really creating a whole new category of intellectual property, or a new way of documenting. And
There's no question. There's no question about it. I mean, first of all, you know, it doesn't protect you in the sense that it doesn't automatically zap anyone who's trying to do this. But it's like the deed to a house. I mean, it will stand up in court. You know, I mean, if somebody comes and tries to sell your house out from under you, first of all, I don't wish that on anyone, but one of the weapons on your side is you're the one who has the deed. They don't have the deed.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that's, and that may be a way of,
and that's accepted. And that's accepted. I mean, that's accepted in, you know, our part of the world. I mean, that, especially actual.
And that's what that transparency, I don't know what the right word is, but transparency is what that is. Transparency is, I don't, the attractive is not the right word, but transparency is something.
Yeah, I think it's opposite. It's non-confusion. It's, you know.
Clarity, yeah.
It's a clarity thing. And, you know, and, you know, and in our world, you know, just think about living in celebration or me living in the beaches. The notion that your property is your property is so well developed.
Yeah.
People know you don't screw around with other people's property. You don't go.
Right.
You just don't walk on to other people's property. You don't act as if it's your property. You know,
right.
We have that as a developed. And it's the number one foundation stone for personal freedom, you know, in the world, that there's an area that belongs to you and you alone where you can do with it what you want.
Yes. In collaboration. And that's what's really, yeah, that's really great. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, humans are the great cooperators, because inventing something for yourself isn't a very, very interesting activity.
Right.
You invent it for the benefit of other people.
Yeah, yeah. And that is interesting to think about it as entrepreneurs, as a genus. That's kind of a because
we're
a cooperating species, entrepreneurs are a genus of, you know, prolific cooperators. Yeah.
And then free zone collaborators are,
yes, that's the next
a refinement.
Yes. And that's funny, because that leads into my next one, is to be an asset detective, seeking out collaborations, where you're looking at, when you see other people's assets that maybe they don't even see as assets. Because we didn't actually expand on that in number three, but
I'll tell you something. You know, there's all this talk about socialism and everything.
Yeah.
You know, these days, I think why it's becoming a subject is that the people who are the thinkers in that realm, you know, about socialism, and maybe, you know, maybe socialism is better than capitalism. My personal view of that, you know, as I read things on the internet and I try to make sense of them, is that socialism is now being severely threatened, because, and I'm going to make just bring it back to what we were talking about over the last 10 minutes, is that socialism requires that nobody owns anything.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it's a fundamental factor. But the blockchain expands ownership virtually for everybody.
Yeah.
And so I think that whether they are understanding the direct threat to socialism, they're feeling something is going haywire here, because I think blockchain is, in the year 2021, kind of where the internet was in 1991.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, that's really, it's still, I haven't gone.
It's hard
down
to get wrap your head. It's hard for most people, and that I would include myself in. That is just kind of hard for me to wrap my brain around what's actually happening here.
Yeah.
Where with the internet, I don't have that much trouble. You know, after 30 years of living and experimenting with it, I don't have that much trouble with it. But the blockchain is an entirely new realm. And I think that, people are talking about it without understanding what it is.
Yeah. I think that's it. And they're talking about cryptocurrency as if that's the blockchain, which it is not. And that's really,
Or they're talking about NFTs, like people selling, you know, they've got, they've saved all their toenails since they were 10 years old. And got them in a bottle, and they painted them gold, and they're offering people a chance to own this bottle, this bottle of Golden Toenails.
Right. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, the whole, but it's interesting that in IP, the music industry has sort of figured out this fractional contribution model better than most. And I think that model is opening up to other.
Well, I think the reason is that I think the reason is starting with, iTunes, probably the first real where you could do it legally, where you could download other people's music. That's now 13 years into existence. And it utterly changed the entire industry. I mean, digitalization.
The music industry is back to its peak level. 1999 was the peak of the music industry. And this year will mark going over the 14.9 billion dollars or whatever it was.
But the configuration of the music industry is utterly different. You know, the big recording companies, who even knows about them? I mean, do they even exist anymore? And their packaging, the way they delivered music, first of all, you have to have an album. We're not interested in a song. You have to have an album. And if you want to buy one song, you have to buy the whole album. And, it's mostly lawyers and accountants who are taking the cash home. It's not the artists who are taking the cash home. Actually, I think Steve Jobs was the one who destroyed the classical, the traditional recording industry. I think his first model for iTunes, he says, you want to put just one song up? Sure, just a song. How much are we going to charge? Why don't we just charge $1? Yeah, we'll just charge $1,
Right.
And since you created the song, why don't we give you 60 cents? We just want 40 cents,
Right.
And we can do that because all the other humans that used to be between you and your customer, iTunes eliminates all those people.
And we don't need all the packaging, and we don't need all the don't need the physical product of it, right?
We don't need bricks and mortar stores,
Right.
We don't need plastic. We don't need cardboard. We don't need something. We don't need any of that.
Yeah. And you don't need to get on American Bandstand or get on the TRL Live. Total Request Live on MTV. You don't need any of that to get your music in front of people. You can go right to, you're on TikTok. TikTok, it's interesting what TikTok
or you're on Pandora. And we'll get to know you. Or Spotify. Yeah, we'll get to know you. More and more, the more you tell us about what you like and dislike, the more they'll get you what you like.
I wonder, the interesting thing that I look at as we start the acceleration, like I don't see it slowing down. When I looked at those stats for the creator economy, when we're talking that basically it's, some very small percentage of the world of the accounts are creators, like full-time. That number is going to grow, but we've reached hard limits on the input of the input capability of our ears, that we've only got a limited, our eyes can only see and our ears can only hear in real time what is the amount of hours that we have available.
I think we're in a quantity game. I think that basically the last 30 years of the internet has been a quantity game. You know, yeah. In other words, you can collect as much as you want, but you can only pay attention to a small percentage of what you collect.
Right.
And what I think is going to start coming into existence is that it's now a switch to quality, but it's only yes. the consumer that's determining quality.
Yes.
You can't impose quality on the consumer because the consumer, you have no control over the consumer.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's, that's pretty amazing, actually. It's really starting to see this. Like,
well, you'll have your own audience. Like, that's mm-hmm. what we've really figured out. We've got 10 podcasts, and we've got our own audience. And the audience has chosen themselves to be our audience. In other words, that they like what they hear, you know, or they like what they watch. There's a unlimited number of audiences, but no one can have a whole audience. There's nobody who can have the whole audience.
Right.
And so in some ways, a guy like Zuckerberg, and the other social media, they're the last of a particular type of person. This type of person will never exist again because they can't own everything. They can't own everything. And with blockchain coming along, is that you're just going to have a zillion owners of something. And yes. nobody can just take control of something. So I think he's the last of a particular type of animal, you know. I'm using Zuckerberg as the, you know, as the representative. There are others like him.
Yeah.
But I think this thing of what you can own in a monopoly is coming to an end.
But if you're confident, this is the interesting thing now. If you're where it was going with that transparency is if you can present your ideas in a package or whatever, and when you put them up on the blockchain, that is your staking your claim on that mm-hmm. idea in a way, and that is time stamped and irrefutable. That safety, I mean, that's the word, transparency, is safety for creativity, that you don't feel like you need to hide idea. Or
I think you've really put your finger on the number one issue, that it's now safe to create.
Yes.
And it hasn't been for all of human history, it hasn't been safe to create.
Right. And if people pioneer
we're announcing, Dean, you and I, this very uh-huh. moment, I just want you to, we'll have a blockchain record of this. We have just announced to the genus part of the human race that it's now safe to create.
It's safe to create. Let's mark the time.
We'll mark the time. I've got 12:03 myself. Yeah, Eastern time. 3
p.m. Eastern time, July 20. What's the date today?
17th, I think.
Okay, Sunday, July 17th. Yes.
Yeah,
that's
good. Dean Jackson, Dan Sullivan, for the first time, made an announcement that for the creators of the world, the creative genius of the human race, that it's now safe. It's now safe to create.
It's now safe to create. There we go. So we will forward this to our authorities.
Yes.
And now what? Then we know. There we go.
Well, you got to know what you're up to. Dean, you got to kind of know what you're up to, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're now giving permission. We're giving permission to creative people all over the world to start creating, because it's now safe for them to do this.
But now it's like this universal thing where you don't have to guard your stuff in the same way as you would guard your physical belongings. Like if you have all your wares spread out on a table at the flea market and you leave and take your eye off it, people could just take your muffins. Right. But if this is the equivalent of saying to the person next to you in the booth, would you watch my booth? Yes. That's really safety. Transparency creates safety.
Yeah.
All right. Well, to be continued, we only got three or four
indeed.
Of them.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. I am going north this coming Saturday, but on one of the Sundays I talked to Babs. I said I can't go two whole Sundays without talking to Dean, but next Sunday I will take as a free day, but the following Sunday, if it's okay with you.
Perfect. I will do the same.
We're synced.
Yes, synced up for sure.
Yep.
Okay.
I'll you know, talk we're to you exploring soon. New territory, what? Mr. Jackson. We're exploring new territory here.
Yeah, we really are. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Well, you enjoy your time up north, and
yep.
I will talk
and to that'll
you
be 2 weeks from
Sunday.
Today. 2 weeks from today. Yeah.
I'll be here.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.